There's Always a Lyric is sponsored by Lotus 823. At Lotus 823, your goals are our goals. We help consumer tech, home, and lifestyle brands gain visibility, drive relevant traffic, and increase sales through customized public relations and marketing strategies. Want to learn more? Head over to lotus823.com or get in touch at biz@lotus823.com today.
Welcome to another episode of There's Always a Lyric. Today, my guest is David Rhodes. Just a little bit about David. David is an experienced manufacturer's rep. He's focused on helping brands succeed at big box retailers like Best Buy, Staples, Q&H, Sam's Club, and many others. He's driven by a passion for providing excellent value to his firm's clients and to his customers. He takes pride in providing the best representation possible. As the president of E.B. Carlson, he and his are often referred to by their clients as, quote, the best rep firm they interact with, which is a lot because there's a lot of great rep firms out there. In addition to his primary job functions, David is the founder of Turnskew LLC, a website used by countless suppliers to confirm pricing, availability, promotions, and competitors' promotional activity at Best Buy. Turnskew automates many manual tasks, helping manufacturers to save time, save money, and sell more products. David has worked in the rep industry for 29 years, woo, gaining experience and expertise in the go-to-market strategies and negotiations and product marketing. As a seasoned manufacturer's rep, he is passionate about putting the needs of clients and customers first. And outside the office, David enjoys pickup basketball, golf, travel, and spending time with his lovely wife, Tracy, and their beautiful three children. And with that, welcome, my dear friend, David. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, David. Appreciate it.
So that was a lot. There was, and 29 years.
Is the podcast over? Did we? I don't know if it was too much time already.
I'm pretty sure all the listeners are exhausted at this point. They all just laid down. I really want to kind of start at the present. What led you on this path? Obviously, you started in the rep business as a rep. You are now the president of E.B. Carlson. Can you just give us a snapshot of how you got into it? What led you down this long and winding path that's brought us to 29 years of rep service?
Sure. I started out as a seller for NCR Corporation right out of college. Mm-hmm. Did that for about 3 years, and then made a move over to what would be like a CDW.
Okay.
And spent about 5 years at a competitor to CDW that doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Other sellers can relate to and would find is that when you are working for a big company, sometimes they have a tendency to sort of track your compensation in a way to sort of keep you inside of a box.
Right.
And even if you're selling more, they sort of adjust plans to make sure you're sort of in that box of what they want to pay for the role.
Sure.
And that's where I've kind of found myself after my fifth year at this CDW type company that for a while kind of ramped up. It was nice. And then it started going down, even though I was doing more. And so as the story goes, very good friend, Ed Carlson, who was the founder of E.B. Carlson Marketing, we just got to talking and he was talking about wanting to grow the business and struggling to figure out how to do that. Here I was, you know, with a mortgage, a wife who was staying home with our one child of 6 months.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, why don't we do something together? And that was sort of the beginning of it. And I think what it scared me to death was taking a 65% reduction in pay. And
that is a lot because you were already settled. I mean, you had, like you said, you had a home, you had your wife with a young child. I mean, that's a lot to take on.
I know you can relate. It's probably the scariest time of your life to do it. But at the time, I was looking to make the change because I realized that, you know, I didn't want to spend a full career as a seller just having my compensation managed forever by somebody else.
So you kind of bet on yourself, essentially.
That was really it. And believe me, there were lots of, second thoughts and questioning that decision along the way, and particularly in the early months of it. And, you know, finally about a year into it, I felt like, you know, we were, you know, keeping our head above water and paying our bills. And then, you know, 29 years later, I'm still doing this, but it was really sort of driven not so much out of a, like I was feeling like I really wanted to be a consumer products person, but more so at the time feeling like I really wanted that independence of having a little more control over my own destiny.
Right. And With that, of course, comes risk. And there, you know, it's that old saying, right? No risk, no reward. And I'm glad you brought up about, you know, the question marks and those days when you're just wondering, did I make the right decision? Because I think a lot of people think when they look at the sort of entrepreneurs that, and the stories that are told, it sometimes feels like it's just one hockey stick of ascendance, right? And it's really not that, is it?
It absolutely is not that. it is not that. It's going to be a lot of questioning, second thoughts, bumpiness along the way. But I think part of it is just being willing to work hard, at being persistent, and just having confidence that you can do it. Those are the three hardest things. And then, you know, I know a lot of, you know, people that might maybe listening or thinking about, boy, you gotta have a little bit of a nest egg, you know, to do something like that. Sure. Unfortunately, you also want to not put your whole life and family and everybody at risk. So, you know, wanted a little bit of a savings account to sort of draw from at the time to sort of weather the storm of that first year of trying to build a business. So,
did you have folks that you met along the way that were good mentors to you or good coaches? And I guess including Ed himself, right?
Yeah. I mean, you certainly have to start there because, you know, when you're coming out of like the corporate reseller, you know, industry, I understood tech. So I sort of came in with an understanding of tech and tech product, more on a corporate tech, not necessarily consumer tech, but enough of a baseline there. Mm. And then, you know, I had, you know, at that point, probably 8 years as a seller. That's what I did right out of college. So I had some of the ins and outs of what to do and what not to do. But in terms of like learning the rep business and the consumer tech business and retail, and at the time, you know, catalogs were still in play where people would, you know, like Mac Warehouse, some of these older publications that were selling product. But you know, Ed really, you know, taught me the business. He was certainly, you know, would be the lead mentor. And then my current business partner, you know, who joined Ed and I only a few years after I did, Norman St. Jacques, was another one that I learned an awful lot from both of those guys. You know, about the rep business and being a rep. And so those are probably the two most influential people in terms of mentoring me along the way to learn about the business. But I had another mentor very early in my career, is a very dear friend still, by the name of Mark Kitts. I'll give him a shout out because I think you can go to markkitts.com. He does sales coaching now. And there was a point at which I was selling a point of sale system. It would be similar to like what today is, you know, Toast is the big point of sale system you see in a restaurant. Only back in that time, I was selling one that was, you know, was a microprocessor the size of about 5 shoeboxes together. And you would load your operating system onto the thing with a cassette tape. Like you would, like you would like a music tape. And so this thing, when I was trying to sell it, was old technology.
Right.
You know, Mark had left and gone to work for this CDW type company. And he was the one that sort of recruited me to come over there. And rule number one I've learned as a seller is you have to sell something people are buying.
Yeah, imagine.
And it seems simple, but I'm telling you, I'm not the only one out there sitting there looking at, you know, what they're doing as a seller every day going, you know, is it me or is nobody buying this product? And that's really the first question you have to ask yourself.
It's fundamental, isn't it? Really, when you think
it is, it is. So he pulled me over to the reseller business, and I learned an awful lot, you know, from him about, you know, process, persistence, cold calling, some of the real fundamentals of the business. And so anyway, I would give a shout out to him too. Definitely influential and still a very good friend to this day.
That's wonderful. And that's such a great story because he really was not only a mentor, but a coach for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
This eventual ride with E.B. Carlson that turns into one guy, then two guys, then three guys, and then it's a company.
Yeah.
There has to be this leap of faith that, you know, it's like you're jumping into a pitch black room and you have to believe there's a floor. So a floor appears. Because there's so many other rep firms out there. How is E.B. Carlson going to kind of rise up and turn into what it did, right? And that just came down to really having the right people. And it sounds like with Norman and with Ed and yourselves, you had the beginnings of what was a solid team to be able to go out there and gain some market share.
Yeah, and that's true for sure. And you know, and in the time that we've grown to the 11 people we are today, you know, we've certainly had a few bumps, people that came in and maybe didn't quite fit the bill and didn't work out, but those right. have been relatively few in 29 years that where that's happened. But, you know, we look at the expansion of our sales team, you know, where we've added, you know, two guys, you know, Mike Sachs, Dean Dimitroff, both those guys have come over sort of from the buying side.
Yeah.
And so for rounding out a sales team, you know, when you take, you know, lifetime sellers like myself and Ed and Norman, and then round them out with two former merchants and Mike and Dean, the perspective that we get when we take on a new client or even with an existing client and being able to look at product positioning, you know, the marketplace, the competition is just really, I feel like it's unprecedented with any other rep firm that's in the industry. We just have the ability to really vet out opportunity and find a way to help clients succeed.
This kind of pulling that thread a little further, that leads me to TurnSkew. So how did that all come about? And I feel like I'm leading the witness here because it ties directly to the level of detail that you're talking about. And then what your customer, you know, you're looking at your business through your customer's eyes needed and still needs.
It really, that was sort of a TurnSkew was sort of evolved out of a need I had personally. You know, I'm the problem that I saw and I was having is that on any given day, understanding which products were, you know, available, add to cart, or out of stock, or in some cases with Best Buy, if you're out of stock for too many days, they actually will pull the listing down, and then you have to try to get it back up when you do go back in stock with an item. So one, monitoring that manually, impossible. And so I was getting calls from clients with, hey, this SKU, you know, we've got it back in stock. How come it's not showing up on BestBuy.com? How do we fix that? And so I was sort of playing whack-a-mole with 300 SKUs, trying to solve problems. And it became like, I'm like, okay, that's not working. And then problem two I was out trying to solve was, you know, as we line up promotions on Best Buy, you know, it could be sitting here on May 5th when we're doing this podcast, I could be putting a promotion to start out on, you know, the 7th of the June. In my old way of doing this, I would get my Outlook calendar and write at 8 o'clock in the morning, don't forget to look at promotion that's running this morning this brand on these SKUs. And I'm like, this is insanity, you know. And then, you know, if Best Buy were price matching somebody the next day, the price could still change. So long story short, I was able to work with Best Buy, get access to their API. So I'm not scraping a website. That's important to them, important to me, because I want to be a good business partner of theirs. And I built a website that automates that entire process and just serves up these beautiful reports. You can get them daily, you can get them weekly. And you don't have to go on BestBuy.com anymore to like try to keep track of all that. The information is served up to you in a very simple, easy way. And I built it for myself, and then I started to show some people, and they're like, "Can we use it too?" Long story short, I built it into a SaaS site so you can subscribe to it monthly. Onboarding is an hour, maybe to get a brand up and running. And today I've got brands of companies, 500 million, billion-dollar companies that are using the website, because I've just taken a very simple problem, solved it in a very easy way, and made people's life easier. And that's what I was really looking to do for myself, and now doing it for other brands, and other rep firms actually are using it too.
That's such a great story, David, because it really speaks to you being able to address something because of the level of experience that you have. And you just said one day, why does this have to be like this?
Yeah.
You know, there's an underlying theme here I'm noticing about your life and your career, which is sort of you're an eternal optimist, right? You're constantly looking at, well, this is happening and this is not so great, but what's the opportunity?
I think I've got sort of a natural curiosity. And that's, I think, true. That's probably whether it's, you know, your business or my business, whether it's solving a business problem like TurnSkew did, or, you know, just walking into a Best Buy or a Lowe's and, you know, rather than just picking up the light bulb that you needed or something like that, I'm constantly just looking at displays and, you know, wondering why it's there, what could have been better, and why they didn't call us to rep it, you know, so. I think we're fortunate that a lot of us in the company are sort of driven by that same sort of natural, you know, curiosity. And I think there's really no replacement for curiosity, creativity, and persistence. It's just all the things that are sort of necessary to succeed.
I agree wholeheartedly there. Along the lines of curiosity and experimentation is failure. And
yes.
And something nobody wants to talk about, but I think it's an important element because that's where the best learning takes place, at least for me.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know,
and how long is this podcast? How long is the podcast? Is that... Do we want one example or how many do we need?
well, and we can just talk about it. You could use an example if you like, or just talk about it broadly about failure and what failure plays as a role in your professional career.
You know, if you're not taking chances and you're not failing, then, it's just part of life. And you really have to take risks and have to take chances. And whether it's a career change, you know, in a brand, you're in this department and you want to go to this and it doesn't work out, mm-hmm. you know, or it's taking a leap of faith and starting your own business. I mean, it's just part of it. You're going to have things that work and things that don't work. And what you try to do, I think, on the failures, first and foremost, learn from them, you know, secondly, don't let them bankrupt you would be maybe I should reverse one and two, but also don't be afraid to take the risks. And, you know, I have two very short examples that I can tell you about. The very first one, I go back to when I was 22 years old and I'm interviewing with NCR and I'm on my third interview. And the guy tells me, he's like, you know, I know you've applied, you know, to be in our hospitality division, you know, selling point of sale systems. Well, I still remember this conversation. He goes, you know, we have a financial services division and, you know, we're going to be, you know, launching a big sales team and they're going to be out selling, you know, ATMs. So I think that might be a good place for you. And I'm like, well, you know, I spent sort of my college years and high school years working in restaurants. I was really kind of interested in the hospitality industry. And so failure number one came at May of 1985, 2 weeks after I graduated college, because that guy was, he basically said, you know, ATMs. And I'm like, who's going to want to take money out of a machine? No. I love my teller, you know, so you can make them early and you can make them, you know, it doesn't when.
That's so great. You were literally standing at the gates of a revolution and said, no, that's okay.
No, that's okay. I don't want to walk through it. Yeah. And I still remember being at the NCR used to call them point calls. At the end of the month, you'd stand up and say, your sales were for the month. And, you know, the ATM people are like, I'm 7,000% of quota and blah, 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 blah. And like, Dave, how's things going over in hospitality? I'm like, 7%, you know, you know. And I'm going, wow, that was a mistake right out of the gate. My goodness. But
that's such a great story. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So we're not always going to make the right choices. But, you know, and it took me 3 years to make a pivot, you know. So I think one is recognizing mistakes, not being afraid of them. And two, when you really feel like you've made one. Not don't hang on for too long, you know, in that bad role or with that bad mistake, and try to make the pivot faster. Don't just say this is going to work. It's going to work now. So that's probably the best example. But along in the rep business, we've certainly had. There's been other things along the way, things that have worked, things that have not worked.
Sure.
Particular client or somebody we've hired that we thought would be great that didn't work. Right. And, you know, fortunately some of those, you know, mistakes are, you know, they still happen. I mean, we'll still onboard a client occasionally, things just for whatever reason, the fit isn't right. Fortunately that doesn't happen very often, but it still does happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just it's part of life and business, right? And I know you see it in your business too,
right? Absolutely, because we're working with human beings. At the end of the day, behind that brand, there's people,
right?
And that's just part, as you said, that's part of life with a capital L, whether it's personal or professional. Sometimes things work with people, and sometimes they don't.
Right, for sure.
I want to kind of move a little bit away from the professional to the personal. With everything that you do and just having Turnskew, along with a mature rep firm, being the president, how do you find balance?
What's the next question? I'll answer.
David answer.
That's a great question. The reality is something I still need to be working on. Clearly, I do find time for I mentioned in my bio, I get out or pick up basketball 1 to 2 nights a week.
Yeah.
Still, and at again, this stage of my basketball career, you would find there's a lot of clutching and grabbing. And it's all done with a smile, and they're my friends, and so they realize after three trips down the floor, the fourth one isn't going to be quite at the pace of the last two. But I would say that's probably my biggest outlet right now. And then as the season gets a little warmer out here, I've got friends to golf with. But I just got back from a really nice trip with my family. We were fortunate enough to go visit my daughter studying abroad in Italy, and so
that's lovely.
Sneaking some travel and really try to do the best I possibly can with it. But with everything that's going on professionally, it's a hard business to completely disconnect from periods of time. And I've just sort of, for me, the trade-off and the independence, I'm okay with that. I'll take that 9 o'clock phone call, from a client if it's really important. It's still a good trade-off. I'm blessed and fortunate. It's a great life. I wouldn't trade it.
That's so refreshing and honest to hear. This kind of makes me think about the other side of this, which is you look at the trade-offs and you go, for me, those trade-offs are okay. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
What do you tell those young David Rhodes out there? What can you tell them in terms of advice about this type of career, this existence that you've had, and this profession that you've built?
I think our industry is under, I wouldn't call it necessarily pressure, but we've got certainly changing consumer buying habits. There's a lot more direct-to-consumer products. You go on Instagram, Facebook, those kinds of things. People are going, D2C. They're going right to the customer, bypassing retail altogether. But our industry won't go away. Physical retail, despite the fact it's contracting, and there's fewer retailers, Bed Bath & Beyond just went out of business, there is still an element, and will always be an element, I believe, of people who want to go to physical stores. It's an experience. And some people just like to shop. So I don't think our industry may not physical retail may not be, growing, per se, in terms of more shelf space and more retailers. It will be here, and it will be here for a long period of time. And then you've got some firms have started to specialize in doing things like helping with direct to consumer and have sort of pivoted into that direction too. So there are firms that are doing a little bit of a hybrid approach, doing some retail, doing a little bit of online, and helping some clients with D2C and that approach too. For people like looking at the rep industry, I know a lot of buyers have sort of at some point in their life have shifted over. We have too. I know you've talked to a lot of other, manufacturers, rep firms, people who have left the buying role, have kind of pivoted over to that. Of those people I've talked to, most are pretty happy that they made the change and like it on the other side of the desk, so to speak. So I guess, from a big picture view, I would be encouraging and still optimistic about the business. There are always new products coming. There's always new companies forming. There's always existing companies that are, not getting sort of the shelf space and placement that they feel like they deserve. And so there'll always be a place for Perhaps that's my belief.
As long as you attach those qualities that we talked about earlier, especially the one about making sure that you've got persistence as part of your toolkit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's probably the number one driver. It's just you can't be sort of a one and done on trying to secure placement at a retailer. You've just got to have to look at it sometimes through three or four different lenses, try to figure out a way.
Completely agree. There's more than one way.
And, yep, for sure.
I have one more question for you, and it ties back to the title of the podcast of There's Always a Lyric. So if there was a song title or a lyric that captures you, David, or your story, maybe your view on life, what would that be?
So you're probably ready for a sarcastic answer, which I promised I wouldn't give you, because I had 10 that were funny, but I'll give you the I scribbled them all out. And I ended up picking Go Your Own Way, Fleetwood Mac. I thought that one in the song goes on, you can call it another lonely day, you can go your own way, because when you do go your own way, there's going to be those lonely days. And I just thought that sort of really captured the essence of whatever it is, whether it be the rep business, the PR business, or starting a SaaS company or whatever.
That's a great way to twist the meaning of that song into something completely different. That's great. Love that. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me today. This has just been a pleasure, as I knew it would be. You're such a great person to just hang out with. And I'm glad that over the
years. Mutual.
Yeah. And I'm glad that we've gotten the opportunity to work together over the years. It's been some of the best and funniest times in my profession.
For sure. And many more to come. And thank you so much for having me on your podcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.